So anyway, on this week's show, we explored the explosion of gun violence in our streets. And I think at minimum, we've done 4 or 5 episodes around gun violence, around this issue. We have spoken about how to resolve it, at least minimize this issue, whether it be through education, policy, regulations, etc. But it is getting worse. So I hear on the news, and that's broadcast media. All right, it's getting worse. But people getting shot in Times Square, children, women, girls, it doesn't matter. And to me, it feels like we're on Gunsmoke or something, you know? That's the impression that I get. We just will be living in Deadwood, if anybody's seen that show. So HBO, Western, you know. Anyway, another issue is the brazen attack that, and we might cover this if we can get to it or not, is the brazen attack on voting rights. And this is one of the most important assets that we have as Blacks in our toolkit, the vote. So the Republicans are doing everything they can to disenfranchise the Black and Brown and Native American vote. This is being done at the state houses around the country. So what are they saying? If you can't win the game with the existing rules, then you change the rules. That's what they're doing. They're changing the rules. And that is blatant, in your face, F you, what's next? What's next, folks, if they take away or they try to minimize our vote?
Right.
If this is a fundamental right, and this fundamental right is taken away, I want somebody to tell me what recourse do we have? Okay? What recourse do we have? So with that said, I'm going to turn it over to Michelle so that she can introduce the panel. Thank you.
Thank you, Walter. Good evening, Walter. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
All right. So good evening, everyone, and welcome to our live audience, and welcome to the Walt Weekly Friday Live. The Walt Weekly, please share this podcast by clicking the lower share button. You can share it through via text, email, or Facebook, and make it a live post for people to join in. The Walt Weekly is brought to you by Beauty Blends by Ami Soap and Love and Michelle Sweeney Hair. Our intro and outro music is brought to you by Uncle Nephew. Please join poet and author Judy C. Andrews out of Brooklyn, New York. We have Honorable Gene Anthony Edwards, male district leader out of the Bronx, New York, 79th District. We also have Ernest J. Robinson out of Washington, D.C., Sergeant, U.S. Marine Corps combat veteran, senior consultant at B. Ernest Leadership Professional and Consultant. Our next panel is Gregory Coleman out of North Carolina, owner of Illumination Media and Technology, and also engineer at The Walt Weekly. Thank you, everyone. I will post everyone's social media handles and websites in the chat room. Anyone in our audience, if you have comments or questions, please post them at the bottom, and one of our panel members or our hosts will acknowledge and see or respond to you in the chat room or live. Thank you all. Back to you, Walter.
Yeah, thank you, Michelle. Thank you. Okay, let's get on with it. You know, the rise in gun violence, and this is going to the panel. Why is it still rising, or is it rising? If you compare last year to this year, is there a tick up in gun violence?
Yeah, I mean, because of COVID, you didn't have anything. We had curfews. You couldn't be out much. And I think, you know, with these gang rivals, they're making up for lost time. You know, they can't be out there hurting each other during COVID. So now they're out in full force. And a lot of them are extremely young, teenagers, 13, 12 years old, you know, that are out there. And they initiate them in gangs because, you know, most of these teenagers will not be charged for crimes. You know, they're not going to put them away. They get away with it and they walk out. Also, a lot of convicted felons, murderers, et cetera, were released early out of prison due to COVID. That's my opinion.
Okay. Thank you, Michelle. Do I have anybody else want to chime in on that?
Oh, hello there. Good evening, everyone. This is Judy, and I agree with Michelle completely. I think that COVID had a lot to do with it because we didn't have this We had violence in our communities, but not like this. We didn't see gunfights on Times Square, you know, not recently. And I do believe that because of the lax, idea of letting many gangbangers, gang members out of prison due to COVID, they decided to get revenge on the people who put them there. And as a result, it's wreaking havoc on the communities around us because they haven't been trained how to shoot. They don't know how to use a gun. And as a result of that, they're just pointing and shooting. You know, we've seen it, you know, in the Bronx with the little children who were trying to protect each other from this guy who was pretty much a teenager. He was actually, he may have been like 19, but he was still like, you know, almost a teenager. And he was shooting at someone and didn't care that they were there. And then today, this guy was shot dead in Brooklyn. And he was like 12 or 13. So when you see his face, you're like, what are you doing? It's summertime. You're supposed to be out having a good time, relaxing and enjoying your time off. But there is no, you know, there was a problem with the Summer Youth Employment Program that they randomly picked students. You know, the kids have nothing to do with their time. So many of them who were imprisoned, who are probably out on probation, are seeking vengeance on people who put them there. And you know, it is really dreadful.
Yeah, I'm sorry, June. I never thought of that, though. I never tied that, you know, tied those together. That a lot of this is vengeance, you know, for, you know, I wouldn't call them snitches or anything like that, but payback for calling them out and getting them arrested and,
definitely.
You know.
Exactly. You know, I could vouch for that one. I could vouch for that one. Last year, an ex-in-law was murdered. It was a big case in Staten Island. He was murdered. His pregnant girlfriend was murdered and another young woman shot in the back. She survived, but it was actually a gentleman. I won't even say a gentleman. He was an animal. They released him right before COVID. He was already serving 25 years to life for murder.
Right? Wow.
And they released him. He wasn't even out for 3-4 months. Okay, he got out, I think it was February. He killed this guy the week of Mother's Day.
And my God.
Because he had a grudge against him for years. He just kept, and he looked like a psychopath. So, you know, the system just allowed these people to get out. And I know of a few people that should not have been out. Like, why are you letting him out? COVID? You know?
All right.
That's just tragic. It's tragic.
Hey, Ernest, you want to add something?
Okay, cool. Okay, all right, good. I want it to be, I don't think that we can blame it all on COVID. Obviously, there are real life cases, such as, that are there. And so I think that from each person's perspective, there's going to be a level of truth to everything. So you don't want to put everything on COVID, you don't want to put everything on, you know, individuals being released because those 12-year-olds weren't incarcerated. Those 13-year-olds weren't incarcerated necessarily. And so there are, you know, so I think that the issue really begins with violence. Guns just happens to be a tool that's used to express their violence. So why are we having so many violent episodes? Because, like, would it be better if they were just, you know, would it be better if it was just a brawl and people died from fist fighting? Or from knives or from anything else. Like, so why are we having so much violence in our neighborhoods and communities? And I don't think necessarily that there is more so of an quote unquote an uptick in it. I think the use of the tool of a gun to express their violence might be being used more, but violence in our communities, I think, have, you know, either stayed the same or they may have increased. And so then why has the violence increased? You know, and I think you spoke to, you know, the summer programs, you know, not having, constructive activities to being able to do. I know every year I used to go to the Boys and Girls Club on Hoe Avenue in the South Bronx every single summer. you know, and but I know that so, but because of restrictions, the basketball leagues have been canceled or reduced. The swim leagues have been canceled or reduced. And so there is not anything. And so then you have individuals who are unemployed. So there's a lot of ancillary issues that contribute to the overall violence. And I think that guns are just a tool that expresses that particular violence. And I think we need to look at those issues. How we reduce violence? Why would I want my brother or my sister, you know, being angered at me to a particular point they want to cause harm, despite what tool that they use to cause that harm?
Wow.
Okay.
I mean, you know, also, okay. I kind of feel like police presence as stress is also has a lot to do with the morale of the police department also. And gang members are drafting, you know, younger members. It's, you know, it's, the gangs were always there. You always had the Latin Kings. You've always had the Bloods and the Crips.
Yes.
And, you know, mm-hmm. like I said, you know, the lockdown had a lot to do with them not being out. Crime has always been there. And, you know, I hate to say it, but it's like they're making up for lost time. We're killing each other, tragically. But there's innocent people that are also there. You know, they have no, they don't care, you know, who's there. I mean, that perfect example was that young lady covering up for her little brother, you know, and this guy trying yes. to get to this guy no matter what. You know, yes. the mentality of this person doing these things. I mean, there's cameras everywhere. Everywhere.
Right.
You know, right. They finally got the guy from Times Square, right, recently.
Yeah. So, and then right after that, there was another shooting. right after that, exactly. for the same reason.
Exactly. The fenders were fighting. Yesterday, they reported four different shootings in Brooklyn, then in the Bronx. Yes. I mean, it's just like, it's the Wild Wild West.
Yes.
You know, so yeah. they got to figure out something, you know. Law enforcement has to figure out something.
All right, I'm on Gene. If I can get Gene in here.
I think he dropped.
He might still be there, but he's there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Gene. I said that the shootings were bad last year. It just didn't receive much coverage because everything was about COVID right. and the death toll mm-hmm. state to state. But no, the shootings were real brazen last year, mm-hmm. and it was worse because everyone was wearing a mask and sunglasses and
right, can tell. Mm-hmm.
You couldn't identify them, but like I said, it wasn't reported. Now it's just brazen, you know. Talking to some friends that are bosses in the NYPD,
yeah,
and they said that it's so brazen that one recent shooting, the shooter actually had a mask on and took his mask off so everybody could see his face.
Wow.
Shot and killed a guy.
Wow.
Like,
wow.
Yeah, yeah. And and most of it doesn't involve, you know, money or drugs or territory. It's just gang-related shootings, you know. These guys are killing each other over words and you know, just being part of different affiliation. So mm-hmm. the NYPD is doing everything they can as far as doing mm-hmm. programs for the kids and stuff like that. But, you know,
yeah, they do have the programs. They do have those PAL. Yeah,
but here's the thing. And then we have those grassroots organizations like Neighborhood Benches and Guns right. Down right. Life Up and RTG, mm-hmm. which stands for Release the Grip, and SOS right. Save Our Sheets. Now, those programs are good. But what was relayed to me by this detective was that those programs are for the good kids.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Those are the kids who were always good.
Those are the good kids that want to go to college and get out the projects. Mm-hmm. Now you have a criminal element that's just there. Now you ended stop question and frisk. We got these new crime laws, this new crime bill. We got this bail reform. And these guys know it. As soon as they get arrested, they're looking at the cops saying, I'll be back.
Right.
I'll be back tomorrow.
Right.
So especially if they're under 18. Right.
So there's no consequences.
Right, because under 18 now everything is going to family court. So,
right.
And then there's no accountability on the part of the community. Listen, mm-hmm. none of these shooters are Sammy the Bull, right? They don't work for the mob. They don't have disguises. So basically, when somebody's about to shoot somebody, somebody else knows in advance.
Yeah.
These guys don't just, you know, operate covertly and then pop up and start shooting. Somebody knows that they're out there on the streets with a gun. So there's no accountability on the part of the community to pick up the phone and call Crime Stoppers, you know? So at some point, we have to look at ourselves.
Is it a matter of fact? Okay. So I wanted to say...
All right, Greg?
So, to Gene's point, there was a young man that was on IG Live that got shot.
Wow.
What?
That he was, and okay, I was saying that there was a gentleman had, oh, a guy had, they had defaced the mural of Nipsey Hussle out in the West Coast, and they were talking about it. He was sitting in his car on IG Live, and they came and shot up the car, and he got shot on IG Live.
Wow.
But to Gene's point, people know where they are. They know who's coming to do it. And in our communities, we won't say anything. Then you got to be careful about the whole defund the police.
Right.
Because, and the messaging behind it. Now, for those of, who are, of us who are smarter about it, we understand that we're trying to redistribute the funding to go to supportive community programming and hopefully encouraging and empowering community policing. And we want to change the way we do policing. But the terminology itself and the way that the messaging is going is counterintuitive, because now we're seeing that uptick, as we want to frame it, as uptick in gun violence. So how do you counteract that? You want to stop gun violence, but you want to, but you have people out here screaming, get rid of the police.
Yeah, I want to get to that point.
Yeah,
Gene, I want to, Ernest, I want to get to that point, if you can bear along with me, but I understand where you're headed, and I got and it's a good segue into what I want to ask about, okay? But before we move forward, I want to still remain on this rise in gun violence, and why is it that it's still rising? All right, Greg, you've been silent over there. All right, we're killing our own. I mean, do you guys agree with that? We're killing our own folks?
Course.
Within our own communities.
It's you know, it's pretty much based on, you know, whether or not they're getting any kind of education as well as any support. You know, a lot of the programs that we had in the 80s and 90s are no longer there to support them, but we do have other programs within the school system. So I think that if you can get children involved in the school system, they can attach on to programs like the Good Shepherd program. You know, they take the children on trips. They take them to different areas like police stations, as well as prisons. They have classes that teach them skills. There are things that they could do outside of school that are not necessarily academic. So they need to be busy, you know. A lot of the children are not busy enough, and they get bored, and they get involved with, you know, might have a good kid who's, you know, hanging out with a group of people who, you know, who are always in trouble. Mm-hmm. And that is the kid that gets killed, you know. Right. So there are different ways to approach the situation, and I think that we are doing a lot. But a lot more needs to be done. And I think the biggest issue is when this kind of problem hits the white community, then something is done. You know, we've seen it happen now with drugs, with, you know, crack, with all kinds of different issues involving, you know, non-people of color.
Now, that's another segue. Involved. Yeah, yes. I don't want to jump ahead.
We had crack in the 80s.
This is a natural.
Yes, I know.
But
because of the violence comes out of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I want to say, you know, in reference to piggybacking off of what you just said in reference to the community centers, I was just out in Coney Island. I just came from there. We had, growing up in the 70s and the 80s, we had a community center. Right now, they're building a brand new community center about 5-6 stories tall. And the community is complaining about it, that it took the parking lot. So they're trying to provide something in your community for your children to give your children things to do. They have a lot of programs. New York City Parks Department has a lot of programs. The police have a lot of programs. it's, you know, you have to get the parents involved too. Why would you want your kid home all day? You know, my son, when he was growing up, he was too busy to be in the street. I made sure he was extremely active.
Right.
You know, because when you're active in school, when you're a parent that is present at school, the teachers look at that student. They're not going to look at the kids that are just hanging around in the hallways, not doing their homework, not don't see the parents at parents, teachers, conferences. You know, the parents have to get involved as well with their children. This 13-year-old child that was in a gang, how come his parents didn't know this? What did they think he was doing?
No.
You know, it's a parental thing.
And sometimes parents don't know what's going on. Sometimes they work, you know, some parents are working 2 or 3 jobs.
But a lot of them keep their eyes closed. They're working 2 or 3 jobs. Yeah. A lot of damn kids a pair of Jordan sneakers and stuff to keep them quiet, you know, because they're neglecting them for not being there.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta make
I agree. There's no way that a parent shouldn't know what their kids are doing.
Right.
That's true.
You know, it may be a short window that they don't know, but they're supposed to be actively trying to find out what they're doing.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
All right, Greg.
Back? I'm back.
Greg.
I dropped off. I'm not sure exactly what I missed, but I'm going to come in a slightly different direction.
Okay.
You know, in this whole thing. This is painful to me. It's upsetting. It's been going on. You know, I know a lot of people like to say it's new. And, you know, when you listen to the news, they, you know, this is the big thing to talk about. And, you know, it works in cycles. But it's frustrating because I think there's so many factors that we don't deal with. We like, and I know this ain't going to be popular, but, you know, I'm sitting at the table with family, right?
Okay.
We all family, and I'm talking to family. I ain't talking to the outside to be heard by anybody else. But we got to take a look at ourselves. Mm-hmm. We have to. Our neighborhoods should be our responsibility. There's got to be an accountability. And, you know, you see things that Gene does in the community. It's usually coming from a place of accountability. Ernest is setting up programs and gets involved from a point of doing his share in the community. Judy, your literature, your poetry speaks to our condition and to uplift ourselves. But I think we done passed the feel-good moments. You know, we've been doing this. We've been on this gradual decline for the last 50 years. I was a little kid growing up in East New York. And you know, Shell said earlier, we had the gangs. But it was different. It was different. We were only one generation removed from parents that would grab us and whip our, you know what, until we got straight.
Some came from a single parent home as well.
That's right.
So.
I'm saying so. When that mama got home from work, Miss So and So down the street saw us acting a fool. She told on us.
She and sure did.
Anyway, now we've systematically got rid of the things that held us accountable. We've gotten rid of the church. We've gotten rid of being able to let teachers be accountable. We, and you know, for one reason or another, you know, and not saying that they're not part of the reason, we've virtually made the police ineffective in our neighborhoods. They've done a whole lot to make themselves ineffective. Don't get me wrong. I'm not eliminating
them. Right.
Like I said, this is just family. Right. We talking about just family, and we talking about what happens in the family. All right.
We
gotta. It's hard. It's upsetting. It's frustrating. Like I've coached kids all my life, and I coached them just out of the love for ourselves, for each other.
Right.
And we didn't coach them and pat them on the back and say everything's all right. When them kids act up, when they messed up, we got in them. It was grown men who loved them, who was down there, weren't getting paid. We got in them. You know, but that needs to be everybody. We've disarmed all of the entities that hold our kids accountable.
And we also have social media. We have the social media where they're on it all day long. They could see all kinds of violence on social media. And the guns are so available. You know, it's easy to get a gun. You know, you don't have to have any experience. You don't have to have any kind of ID. You can just walk in and pick one up, you know.
But you know what? I'm gonna be honest, Judy. When I was growing up, I could get a gun. It wasn't easy. You know, it's probably not as easy, but if I wanted one, I could get one. You know what? They eliminated me wanting to go get one. There was a sense of morality, a sense of what was right and wrong instilled by the parents and the community.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to go get a gun.
Yeah, right. That is
the
so
gun
true.
Was there if I wanted it. If that I would have asked somebody, I would have got it. But the fact is, we do a preemptive strike. Raise them so they don't want it. Raise them so they value the life of that kid across the street and next door, and value the relationship. And when there's a disagreement, you know, now the social media age, you disagree with somebody on social media, they get canceled.
They're looking for you.
Enemy. They're enemy. Yeah. You're ready to kill them.
Yeah.
Well, that leads me to a story. You know me. I like to tell my stories. I'm going to tell one. I know when I first started sleeping by myself, you know, my grandma was when I first started sleeping by myself, I had my own room the first night. I never forget. I had to, you know, cut the light off and say, okay, good night, Booby. That's my nickname. Good night, Booby. I said, Mom's kid, ghosts. She said, 1 minute. She went, we had shotguns in every bedroom. So she went and got a shotgun and she put it at the corner of my bed. And she said, look, it's a lot of people that you got to be afraid of, but if you see somebody at that window, you take this gun and you shoot them. All right? So that's the way I grew up. And nobody shot anybody. I think there was one murder in my town the whole time while I was being raised. Maybe one murder. And that was a robbery. Nobody got killed. And people had guns.
Listen, nobody, we don't have any more big mamas anymore. Grandma.
No.
Old school grandma.
Yeah, you know.
You know, that's true.
Not just big mamas, you don't have big daddies.
Big daddies, that's right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, giving you that look. You better respect.
And another thing, down the block.
Yeah. I just want to go back a little bit in reference to these children and how they're behaving, and they have no respect for adults.
No.
My thing is, my son knows. I have never heard my son being disrespectful anyway. It's how you train your children. You know, I've had kids that come over and I'm like, what did you just say?
Yeah.
You know, they talk like that to their mother. I'm not your mom.
Oh.
You know, I'm an adult. You're going to have respect in here or you got to get out.
But you know something, Michelle? You know something? It wasn't just you, though.
Right.
It wasn't just you. So your son knew he couldn't be disrespectful in your presence. But there wasn't anywhere he could turn where that was accepted either.
Exactly.
Brothers, aunts,
and he knew better.
Relative.
Trained, respectful. You teach your children how to be respectful.
That's
and they respect you, they're going to respect the next adult in the street.
Yeah.
And that's just how, you know, that's how I was raised.
So what I'm saying is we gotta rebuild those institutions and those cultures that lift this up, that hold our kids accountable, that hit them with that tough love. I don't care. Look, I know you want to express yourself and, you know, I'm sorry. I'm not, that's too new school for me. I'm not with all that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's an accountability.
You can't impose capital punishment and stuff like we grew up with. You go to jail.
I'm not necessarily saying that.
All right.
No, because I didn't.
Yeah. It is a different time.
I came on the tail end of capital punishment, so I did get a paddle.
Not capital, I'm sorry.
Corporal punishment, capital, yeah. But I came on the tail end of.
What I was saying was that the institutions that Greg was talking about and that needs to be rebuilt starts with the institution of the family. It starts with the institution of home. It starts with the institution of the church. It starts with so those basic institutions where we learn those family values and principles. And
so I'm very sorry that we're having these difficulties, but we are virtual, and we got people up and down the East Coast, so we're very dependent on connectivity. So Ernest, are you there? Okay, all right, we're gonna move on to Gene. Gene, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. And, you know, I heard what everybody's saying. And you know what? It goes back to what I said earlier. these are the good kids. These are the good parents, you know, that know whether they're single moms or not. These are the good people. We got to talk about the shootings. Good people are not doing shootings, all right? You know, a lot of these guys, you know, their mother knows what they're doing. You know, their grandmother's trying their best, but, you know, they can't control them. So we have to talk about what tangible measures can be put in place to curb this shooting. Now, prior to de Blasio taking office, shootings were down. What changed during the de Blasio administration that has shootings and killings in New York City at record levels? What has changed?
I think also you have to take into account the Black Lives Matter movement.
No. No, when I say what has changed, I'm not talking about other organizations. I'm saying from the transition from Bloomberg, when crime and shootings were all-time low, now we got de Blasio, and all of a sudden, shootings are up. What changed? What changes did the de Blasio administration make that we can say that those policy changes are germane to the shootings in New York City? What changes were made? Come on, well, watch the news.
Go ahead, Walter.
Yeah, let me think. There's one thing about early release, nonviolent.
Right, that's the major change. You know,
that is the only major change I can think of, Jane. If you were in for nonviolence, then you know, some of your time was cut short and you were released.
What about stop, question, and frisk?
I didn't want to bring that up. But
well, that stopped too, right? Yeah.
I was thinking about that. But then again, that's a non-starter because of targeting.
That created a lot of problems too. So it was a double-edged sword.
Yeah, they can probably say
they didn't
that
have
too.
To stop it. They could have just changed some of the you know, how they did things, you know.
Right.
Because now look what happened.
But yeah, so what are you saying, Gene? Re-implement that policy?
Well, there was a Supreme Court decision in a matter of Terry v. Ohio, where, you know, Mr. Terry was stopped by police because the police alleged that he was carrying a firearm illegally. Mm-hmm. And they searched him, and he didn't have a gun, but he had other illegal paraphernalia on him, and he was arrested for that. So the case made it all the way to the Supreme Court, where the Supreme Court decided that it's illegal to arrest a person for having paraphernalia on them when the intent of the arresting officer was to disarm the person, with the belief that this person was carrying an illegal firearm. So, you know, most of the stop, question, and frisk, I forget what to call it, but most of the stop, question, and frisk policies within, you know, local police municipalities basically are somewhat of a bastardization of Terry v. Ohio. And that's why a lot of these stop, question, and frisk, it really harmed the Black and brown community. Because like I said, it wasn't done properly. It was a bastardization of Terry v. Ohio. I think if we get the experts to sit down and to customize, you know, the case of Terry v. Ohio to where, you know, officers can stop people that they believe might have a gun. And if they have weed or anything else on them, you got to let them go. You can't take them in. You can't make that collar. You got to let them go. And I think that, you know, because here's the truth. When bad guys knew that they could get stopped by police, they weren't carrying a gun. They had what was known as a community gun. And they would hide a gun under the tire of a parked car. Now, if it's 10 guys in the crew, they all know that there's a gun under the car that belongs to the crew. But when it's time to do something bad, only one person would take that gun. And the other nine, they would just be there. But now that now that there's no trepidation as far as being stopped by police, instead of there being one community gun for the 10 guys in the crew, now all 10 are carrying.
Right.
Okay.
Wow.
Because, yeah, I didn't know that.
Because if, and here's my further evidence. In the video promo that Walter put up for this week's segment, mm-hmm. when they were showing the shooting in New York City, right? There were four different guys shooting. It wasn't like mm-hmm. one guy shooting up the crowd.
Right, it was a gang fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, in broad daylight. Mm-hmm.
Daylight. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd like to thank Greg for that. I mean, that, he deserves a big shout out for that one.
Definitely.
He's a technology officer for the World Weekly.
Yes, Greg.
Yeah, that was great.
Hey, I appreciate that, but I'm a slightly different from Gene a little bit. Mm-hmm. Now, yes. Go ahead. There, I think there are some adjustments to the stop and frisk policy that could make, you know, that a little more effective. But I think that's coming in a little too late. And I think that's our problem. I think we want to legislate. And I'm sorry. We've been legislating for 50 years. We've been longer than that. I'm just telling you how long I've been around.
Longer than that.
We've been legislating.
Mm-hmm. Much
but
longer.
We do more legislating. And more arguing over which side of the aisle should do this or that approach or this approach. And we do less and less every year to deal with the people. To stop them, we say that it's the bad kids shooting. Well, to me, the logical thing would be don't let them get bad in the first place. Mm-hmm. Attack what's leading to them being bad. So we got to start with the people. You got to start feeding the people. You got to raise the morality level, the accountability level, the self-pride, the self-awareness, the make people know that that guy across the street from you, next door from you, he might look a little different, but y'all need each other. That's what this is all about in the first place. But when you eliminate all the entities that focus on that, now the people are left to television, movies, social media, and music.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way to get any type of moral balance that way. None whatsoever. We got to stop treating a crime and beat it before it's a crime.
Right.
I agree. I wonder, you know, why are they getting guns in the first place? What is the reason that they need them? Well, you have to look across America and see, you know, that, you know, a lot of people are getting guns just to have them. You know, they're walking down the street. In some states, it's okay to have a gun. So I guess the teens feel, well, if they can have a gun, why can't I get one? I might need one in the future.
And I know, we just talk about our community, but white folks are getting shot up in their communities too.
Yes, they are.
You know, because the moral,
it's a nationwide crisis.
There also. They like to focus on us and say that, you know, drugs and this, that, and the other. They're having major problems of methamphetamines, heroin in white communities all over
and
the
mass
place.
Shootings,
white hoods
mass
all
shootings.
Over the country.
But they're not telling you about it. They just want to do the
But that's the narrative. That's the narrative that upsets me also, is that we're the only ones that need the special help. We're the only ones that can't self-govern ourselves.
Yeah,
and I'm angry with that. You know what I mean? Like we're coming in on another bus.
And it's closer to us because we see it in our neighborhoods. It's there in front of us.
Most definitely.
And it's every day. It's nonstop. Mm-hmm. Morning, noon, and night. Broad daylight. So we're seeing it and it's traumatizing us. You know, so I think that in the neighborhoods that we live in, it's nice that we could get them together at a young age and try to, you know, get them back into the church. But you have to look at what the churches are doing. You know, our churches are, many of our ministers are corrupt. You know, there's a lot of corruption going on throughout, you know, New York City, throughout the United States. So the kids don't really see a future. Some of the kids can't think beyond the next day. And if someone's bullying them, they're going to go after them, you know, and then you add drugs and gangs to that and you have a serious problem.
But I think that it goes beyond that. There's an undercurrent under all of this. And that goes back to, you know, desegregation. And I can go there, but I'll be off topic. I want to stay on topic, right? Okay. Governor Cuomo issued a state of emergency. All right. Jane, could you tell me what is, you know, around this gun violence thing? Could you tell me exactly what that state of emergency entails? What is he? Is he just an allocation type thing? Or he's going to put, you know, troops on the street? You know, National Guard. What is it? What is it about?
No, he's like really partnering with a lot of grassroots organization. He met with the CEO and founder of Guns Down, Life Up early in the week when he was here in the city, and he's like really entertaining, you know, ideas on how to, you know, curb gun violence. You know, recently he met with, you know, the Democratic candidate for mayor, Eric Adams, but he talked about, you know, gun violence, you know, behind the scenes. So I'm not really well versed, just the little things that I know that I've spoken to people about that are involved with this, because to be honest, right now there's so many shootings in my district, you know. I'm not even paying attention to what Albany's dealing with, because I got to deal with, you know, things that are taking place in the Concord Village section of the Bronx. Because right. whenever you see a story about a shooting in the Bronx, I got to wait for the end. You know, I wait to hear the location, and then I sit there and say to myself, damn. And then the reporter that's reporting live on the scene, they'll say, live from the Concord Village section of the Bronx, back to you in studio, Chuck. I'm just sitting there like, well, damn. Last three shootings were in my district. I don't. Right. The governor can declare a state of emergency. I declared a state of emergency 3 days ago when the first shooting took place.
Right. You know, so. Right. How many more has to die before they do anything?
Yeah. What about Eric Adams, though? I mean, y'all guys mentioned him. I think I read a little bit about, you know, his platform, what he plans to do. He wants to hire more police, all right, to stem the tide of this violence. So what do y'all guys think about Eric Adams? Because he's going to be your next mayor. I don't think Curtis Sliwa.
I don't think Curtis Sliwa, no.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
I mean, you know, he was a police officer himself, so right. He was also a victim of police brutality before he became a police officer, so he has a lot of good views on what's going on. He's out there. He's actually having meetings with the mayor, with the governor, and trying to get some kind of control over, you know, what's going on in the city. You know, I mean, it's out of control.
Well, you know what? Hold on. This you have to consider. Curtis Sliwa started the Guardian Angels, right?
Yes.
Back in the 70s, 80s.
That's right.
To combat all the crime that was taking place on the subway trains, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Now, let's look at the crime statistics, right? Aside from all the shootings that are taking place, which they're not taking place all over the city, just in pockets of the city, right? But where is crime most prevalent? On the subways. Let Sliwa put together a plausible argument how he could stop crime on the subway. Trust me, every New Yorker that rides the subways and is concerned about their safety and their quality of life, they're going to listen to Sliwa, and he may just very well give him a chance. Don't bet on Adams winning in November, because Sliwa is proven to fight crime. So I'll say that. Sliwa,
we'll see about that. He still has Giuliani behind him, so.
Yeah, I would be very reluctant to deal with him.
Remember how we laughed in 2016?
Yeah, okay. Trump
yeah, that's
same.
Right.
I was going to say, do not
same,
say the name.
Dismiss them the same way.
Right.
Yeah, don't say the name. Right. Don't say the name.
You gotta rub
it in. I ain't running from the name no more. Let's deal with truth and let's be real. Call it what it is.
Obsolete.
You know, I mean, ain't very dangerous from that no more.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that, you know, the scourge of the black, you know, the scourge remains with black and brown. All right. And nothing, as long as it's within that parameter, meaning between, you know, black and brown, I think there's nothing going to be done. Now, unless we have grassroots organizations such as neighborhood benches, just to name one that I've been intimately involved with, and they've been on our show, and I thank them again for being on our show. And I like what they're doing, what they represent, and how they, you know, they're going about their business.
Most right,
but we had 1,000 more of those. I think they could make a significant impact on what's going on in the community.
Walter, can I say something on something? And Judy, you brought it up. And I'm going to speak at it directly. I ain't running from hiding from that either.
Okay.
Church, there's how many, Gene, how many churches in your district? Well, you don't have to jump right back and answer them. They need to be ashamed of themselves.
Well, yeah, well, you know,
they need to be ashamed of themselves. They need to stop them.
Huh? If you go from in Bedford-Stuyvesant alone, if you start at Fulton Street and Schenectady Avenue mm-hmm. and go all the way down to Broadway Junction, mm-hmm. there is literally a church on every block.
That's my old
it
area.
Sure is.
I lived
sure
in that
is.
Area.
Yes.
So I know
every other door is a church in Brooklyn.
Yes.
And can
yes.
I tell you why I say they need to be ashamed of themselves? Because yes. what they do is they come in to have church on Sunday. And you don't see them again until the next Sunday. That's right. 90. I'm sure there's some churches out there doing some positive stuff, but they most are. Of them are hiding in that building and don't bring what they represent or what they talk about inside that building outside
yeah,
the building.
Put it
into
right. And the biggest issue right. is that they want you to be a member before you can be a part of any of their services or any part of their ministries, you have to convert.
For the tithing.
So a lot of teens don't want to do that. A lot of teens just want a place to go on a Friday night where they won't get hurt.
They don't want commitment.
You know, they ain't coming in until they see you care. Until
yeah.
you show that community that you care about
that's
them,
right.
they don't care about you.
That's right.
And that's the problem right. with staying within them walls and going back mm-hmm. to the house. And that's one of the major things. You don't have,
yeah.
you got all them churches, but nobody's impacting the young folks in that community. They're not
yeah.
changing nobody's lives but their own.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. No. That's a major problem.
You don't have what they had in the 70s and the,
yeah.
you know, the 60s, 70s, you know, the 70s before that, where, you know, I'm my brother's keeper.
I'm going to tell you,
right,
in East
other,
New
right.
York, on Hegeman Avenue, this was in the 70s, I went mm-hmm. to And y'all take the name now. The Daughters mm-hmm. of African Descent Daycare Center on Hegeman mm-hmm. and Elton mm-hmm. Street. That was mm-hmm. where we hung out. So it wasn't yeah. just, you know, we couldn't run around there acting a fool because somebody that's associated with that center or somebody mm-hmm. in the community was going to pull us mm-hmm. to the side. And they were going to love right. on us, but they were going to get yeah. us right. They were going to tell us why we were beautiful, why we mm-hmm. were intelligent, why we were special, why we were great, and what great mm-hmm. futures we had ahead of us. Where are them folks at now?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why a person that's borderline, not really sure, is going to go run out and grab a gun.
Mm-hmm.
They have no clue who they are.
Okay.
Okay. Well, check this out. I can tell you that mm-hmm. That the black woman, from my point of view, right, that the black woman has disappeared from the black community. These sisters went out there and got loaded up with all these degrees, and they moved out. They moved out. They living their life, and they on Facebook, you know, taking pictures that they going on vacation once a month. That's 12 times a year, and they up there screaming, you know, living my best life, and all this other stuff. That's where the black woman is. That's where the black woman is.
But can I
they
say
are
something,
not there
though,
in the fight? Because
can I
black
say
women
something,
were
though?
Always black women were always at the vanguard of the struggle.
Absolutely.
These sisters started making 100,000 plus, and they disappeared. I don't need no man. I'm in Cabo living my best life. You know, screw you niggas. Good luck.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what?
I if disagree.
That, if that man, if that strong black man was taken the rightful place that he's supposed to have as the head was
Thank
still
you.
In that community,
Thank
the women
you.
Wouldn't be going nowhere.
Out. That's right.
They wouldn't be going nowhere because when it comes down
right.
to it, at the end of the day, when
That's
it's all
right.
said and done, when that strong black man is there, that woman wants to be there right there with him.
Right.
That's just nature.
There you go. Preach,
That's
brother.
What we were built for. So they ain't running
instead
right.
of Reverend
right.
so-and-so
that
with five different kids from five different women. You
yeah,
know, Reverend so
and
so, five
I'm not blaming
five
him.
Different women.
And I'm not putting it all on him. I'm just yeah. saying, It takes, it's the relationship. It's, that's how they,
that's right.
We're not raised that way anymore.
Let me just interject, okay? Because I think we're really going off the path when we make that type of categorization, you know.
Yeah, okay. So we generalizations.
Yeah, we shouldn't do that. You know, I know a lot of black women. I don't know a lot of black women, okay? But this is such a sensitive issue that, you know, I don't really want to go there. But thank you, Gene. Thank you, Judy. Thank you. Thank you, guys. I appreciate that. You know, you talking to, you know, more than half our listeners are women, so let's see what happens with that. But here we go. Okay, I still would like to know, though, you know, why this rapid increase. And you know what I attribute it to? I attribute it to COVID brain. And I have no empirical evidence. I haven't tested anything. I haven't read any studies of any type of experimentation.
I just had a conversation with my friend about that the other day.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
I just had a conversation with my friend, my BFF, the other day about the same thing. There's something going on with COVID and the brain. Because it's just too strange, all of these things happening so quickly, so fast, and no one understands why all of a sudden now. It's been happening, but it's even worse now.
Yeah, have you looked at the airplanes now with the passengers attacking stewardesses and this and that? Open mask? I don't understand it. So I'm just throwing it out there, guys, for further thought. I mean, I know that there's got to be some studies going on somewhere, but I think COVID brain, you know, wherein, you know, someone has COVID, but there's no signs, no tests being done.
Yes,
just a straight impact to the brain. And I'm just drawing lines, guys. It's just, you know, coming to a logical, or maybe I wouldn't say it's irrational, but I think it's a logical observation that I'm making. Absolutely. What do y'all guys think about that?
What do you guys think about that? We just brought one of our audience members in, the beautiful KR6. Welcome to the show. And I'm sure she had some things she wanted to say before. So do you have any input right now in reference to the question?
Welcome. Welcome. Thanks for joining us. So
hi,
what do you
everybody.
Have?
So, hello. I just want to say, first and foremost, that I'm so honored that you guys are having a podcast in relation to gun violence. My city, where I'm from, down south, we are seeing the numbers increase tremendously. Every other day, there's a young person dying. And as I stated in the comments earlier, that organized a walk and rally in our city, and it was for mothers who have lost children to gun violence in cold cases in our city. And so I did it intentionally on June the 19th, which is, you know, we all know what that is. And so we had the mayor, everyone out there. But I say all that to say that I hear you guys saying it's about the community, but my family and I, we're on two mistrials right now. And the reason that we're on two mistrials is because it takes 12 jurors to be all on one accord in order to convict these perpetrators. So it's not just about the community. It's once these perpetrators get defense attorneys and they find that one loophole in the system that kind of decredits or, you know, like downgrade that person who is a witness to the crime. And if they can do anything to alter their character and convince the jury, then there goes your case. So now you have no accountability. And so I brought it to the chief of police in my city, where if it doesn't take all of America to elect a president, then why does it take 12 jurors to convict a perpetrator? Right. And so we're trying to get those laws changed because these people are getting off on crimes and the evidence is substantial enough for them to get convicted. But it's the loopholes that's in the judicial system that's causing these people not to be held accountable.
Right.
Wow. So I just wanted to, you know, to give some insight on that, because like I stated, we're on our third trial this year. This will be our third trial. And it's just senseless. And these young people, they're so lost. And at this point, I'm trying to connect with anyone that I can so we can get an understanding of what they need from their elders, which they consider us their elders, to provide to them something. And that's what I'm trying to get an understanding, because the old stuff that we used to do, how we were raised, how Martin Luther King walked for us and our ancestors, mm-hmm. that stuff was for those generations. This is a whole new generation that requires new tactics. And that's where I think we're missing the pieces. And I just want to say thank you, guys.
Thank you for that. Yeah, thank you.
No, I want to thank you for bringing this to our attention, mm-hmm. even though I know that you can't speak in detail or Absolutely. Location or anything of that nature. But yes, I'm glad you called in to let us know what's going on.
Thank you guys for allowing me to dialogue with you all. And this is such good information and insight. And I'll be in the chat listening. So thank you all.
All right, also, can you put any information in there for that, for your organization, for your area, put in the chat room for people to check you out.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
And your part, because I see you have a podcast too, so.
And you know what? I just want to, sister, I want to thank you, because I was just talking about how so many sisters are doing well for themselves that they have abandoned the movement. And to hear you come on and speak so intelligently and to talk about, the altruistic, things that you're doing down in your town, it really does my heart well, because at least there's somebody out there that I can point to.
But Gene,
there's still hope. There's still hope.
There's hope for the brothers.
many of the leaders in the not just Black Lives Movement, but many of the leaders are women who are protesting or in the movement and helping our communities. So I can't agree with you on that, brother. I can't agree with you on that.
What did they do with their money again, those leaders? Didn't they buy the houses in the affluent white neighborhoods?
That's like one woman. Like a facade.
Okay.
You can't stereotype them.
Everybody got to pay for one person.
Black Lives Matter. Wait a minute. Hold on.
That's right.
I want to make sure we're talking about the same thing. Are you talking about the leadership of Black Lives Matter? Are you talking about the sisters that are involved
talking
in
about
the struggle?
I'm talking about the sisters around the country who are involved in the movement, not just Black Lives Matter. We know about the case with Black Lives Matter, but there are other movements that are grassroots movements that are around the country. And many of them have female leaders.
Okay.
We have not abandoned anyone.
All right.
We are holding up our fists.
All right, guys.
And we are on the front line.
Guys, Judy.
I'm sorry. Yes.
All right, we have the young lady that she's still connected to us. She has some more to add.
Well, no, I just wanted to say the name that, it's not an organization yet because we just got the name, but the organization name will be Surviving Moms Helping While I Heal for a Safer Community. And so we're actually establishing that now. This is something that's been going on for about a year now. And so we're just now meeting with a lot of, higher people to help assist with that here, because where I'm from, it's I hate to say it, but it's the truth. It's racist here. If it doesn't happen in the white community, then it's non and void. But, in down south, what Black people do is we'll make it to this high level of, respect and pay and money, and then we'll move out of our neighborhoods and into these so-called white neighborhoods. And so we've abandoned our neighborhoods instead of putting into our neighborhoods, investing in our neighborhoods, giving our children a chance to, survive. But we come here, like, for example, I'm a victim of that because I didn't grow up wealthy. My mom was a single mother. I'm a single parent, but I got out of our neighborhood and I moved into what is considered a white neighborhood. And my son, I'm bringing my son up here, which I should have stayed in my community and perform what I'm doing now in my community. And then that way we'll stop running from our community because we consider it so bad when it just needs love and attention. So that's just my take on it,
Right. Well, thank you. Thank you. We appreciate that.
Yeah, I appreciate you expressing that too. What's your name, by the way? Beautiful, six beautiful.
My name is Tiffany.
Okay, so we appreciate you saying that. And I appreciate you saying that you moved out of your neighborhood and you're starting an organization, because most people that, you know, that gets involved. They don't even live in the neighborhood. So I appreciate you expressing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, guys. Much.
So
yes, thank you.
Make sure you check this out Sunday. It'll be rebroadcast at 3 p.m. and you hear yourself.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Yeah,
thank you.
We do a rebroadcast every Sunday at 3 p.m.
Okay.
And it's on everywhere you can find a podcast, you'll find us.
Okay.
And you too.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Good luck. All right.
That was awesome.
Okay, guys.
I think we have time.
Yeah, Ernest is no longer here. I think he had to go somewhere. But it's we are pushing up against the clock. But yes. I do want to speak a little bit about voter suppression. But I think that what we're going to do is make that a separate standalone Friday Live, because voter suppression is very important.
Definitely.
Very important. And so okay. I think it deserves to stand alone. So we're not going to go there today. But I do want to walk back a little bit, all right? Y'all guys remember the crack epidemic?
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, I still know some people that is
college
that's still getting the effect.
Yeah.
They're still getting it, doing it. Yeah.
Not still doing it. You can see they were a part of it.
The effects of what happened to them. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So, you know, that group went to jail. Now we have, you know, the heroin, the opioids and stuff that they have now. And they get millions and millions of dollars to help those folks, those drug addicts. But it did nothing for the crack addict. So I see the same thing with guns. I see a parallel between gun violence and the opioid addiction in terms of how it's perceived and how it happens. So you know with the violence in Times Square, let that violence spread a little bit more to suburbia or more white people get killed, then you'll have a resolution.
Yes, that's exactly what I believe. I said that at the beginning of the show. You know, anytime the nation creates a problem for other people, for people of color, for African-American people, and that problem trickles down into that white group or that group of non-people of color, then they do something. So I hope we don't have to wait for the government or for somebody to do something. But people are doing things. They are finding ways to help our young people. But there needs to be more involvement. And we have a myriad of problems from, you know, slavery, from events that happened beyond our control, police brutality. There's so many things that trigger this idea, well, I'm going to go get a gun to solve the problem. So we have a lot of things to think about and a lot of work to do. And the struggle continues. And we'll probably be talking about this, you know, forever, because there are so many different avenues to this issue, you know.
Yeah, of course. There's so many. We just can't pinpoint one. We can't. Mm-hmm. Not when it comes to violence, you know, that is inherent in urban communities of color. There's a lot more to it. And we're not going to talk about those other ones. But the thing is that we need to take action. And as Greg mentioned, you got the churches. Nobody mentioned churches. But, you know, the church, that was the center. You know, without the church, you know, we wouldn't have the communications back in during slavery. And when I was growing up, you know, I mean, we got to fear something. And I think one of the things with our young people, they don't fear anything. They would shoot you and go to lunch and have a hamburger. So and that's true. Something that's, you know,
yes, that's
I just can't
that's
understand.
True.
All right. So there's a lot to be done. You know, as I mentioned earlier, you got neighborhood benches. We got these other grassroots organizations, but it has to come from us. All right. Ergo, the name of the show. All right. Mm-hmm. Gun shooting. It's our fight. We can't depend on, you know, Congress or the U.S. government coming to our aid. We have to do this ourselves. We have to do it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I want y'all guys to think about it. You know, I push neighborhood benches because that's an organization that I am familiar with. All right. And I met them through Gene, who is a politician. So, you know, I'll go through Gene. You know, I will try to engage. the best I can, all right, to try to do something. Now, this show is to give back to our youth. That's what this show was built upon, all right? So with that said, I'm going to turn it over to Michelle. Y'all guys that are new, please follow the Walt Weekly. Please like, share, all right? And subscribe where possible. We also on YouTube, the Walt Weekly Podcast. If y'all guys want to check that out, we got some good stuff up there. So with that said, again, I'm going to turn it over to Michelle so that she can take us out. Michelle?
Yes, thank you. And thank you to our panel members, Judy, Greg, Ernest, and Jean, of course, and the young lady that came in as our audience participation. We appreciate everyone coming on. Thank you to our live audience for joining, and our weekly panel, Ernest, Greg, Chris, Christopher, Jean, and Judy. Thank you for your expertise on our topics that we have weekly. We appreciate you guys. You can find us at thewaltweekly.com. We're on IG and Facebook, The Walt Weekly, Twitter, Walt Weekly, Podbean, The Walt Weekly, iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Pandora, and other streaming platforms. We appreciate you guys. Have a safe and awesome holiday week. If you're traveling, be safe. Enjoy it. Thank you all. Have a great night.
Thank you. Thank you. Same here to you.
Blessings, everybody.
Night, everybody. Thank you. Have a great
week.
Good
night. Good night.